North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. My name is Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Will Love. Good morning, Will.
How are you? How are you doing, Jack?
I'm doing great. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you. How was your fourth?
We haven't been here. We took last week off, so I had a wonderful 4th of July. Very exciting. Actually, I spent the middle part of the day down here at the radio station doing our salute to the 50 states.
Nice.
Salute. Yes. That was fun. How was your 4th of July?
Oh, it was a great time. We have guests come and visit from Seattle each year, and so they always appreciate being in Sandpoint, getting to do Sandpoint things. And so, yeah, it was a wonderful time with friends and family.
Cool. The parade was very good, I thought. There were more in that parade going on this year, I think, than any I've seen.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit, but my dad always says it was probably one of the only parades in the United States where there was more people in the parade than there were actually watching it. Now, obviously, with the growth of Sandpoint, that's changed quite a bit, and Bonner County. But it used to be the case there was more people probably in the parade than there were watching it.
Yeah. We are joined this morning by a new guest here on this radio program and on this radio station. Eric Welch is here. He's a staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee, covering the city of Sandpoint and education news. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll get into your details a little later on in the program, hoping that we have time. But right now, we better jump in and run down these news headlines. If you have been around downtown lately, you know things have changed a little bit. Especially on Fifth Avenue there. A fire, this is the big news item of this week. On the night of July 4th, right after the fireworks, a fire destroyed Army surplus on Fifth Avenue. It completely totaled the building. It is no more. The building was apparently uninsured, and arson is suspected. Some closed circuit security cameras captured video of an individual kind of walking towards the building right before the fire started. And a $5,000 reward is being offered for anybody with information related to that fire. We can talk. Yeah, go ahead. Or who was going to say
something? No, I was just going to say, I mean, a longtime business. People are familiar with that building. And quite a loss there. It was kind of interesting that, you know, at first it was blamed on a rogue firework, because it happened on the 4th of July. But then, the city of Sandpoint came out and said they suspect it was arson. So interesting situation there.
Yeah. And worth mentioning that the owner of the business, though not the owner of the property, is Cornell Razor, who is currently will be on the November ballot. He's running for state representative.
Another kind of interesting thing from this is that, with the changes in how emergency situations work in Bonner County with the different fire districts and stuff like that, it was kind of interesting to read Zach Hagedon's story about just kind of what those entities, the different entities that are working together, kind of learned. And so obviously there was the fire downtown, and then there was another structure fire within the county that it sounded like it didn't get as many responses as the fire downtown, obviously. Yeah. And so, you know, lots to learn there, especially when you have multiple incidences like happened on the 4th of July.
Right. I mean, so that was the 4th of July, and it was only on July 1st that the Sandpoint Fire Department even came into existence. It has so kind of a trial by fire. pardon the pun. Okay. Idahoans for Open Primaries. They submitted their signatures for final verification on July 2nd down in Boise and were approved. Those signatures were approved by the Secretary of State's office on July 10th. So a big step forward for Idahoans for Open Primaries, and a very good chance that we will see on the November ballot this year the Open Primaries initiative for the voters' consideration.
Yeah, I think it's important, though, that you had that little caveat in there that it's likely going to be there. Attorney General Labrador has come out publicly against this. A story in the Idaho Statesman, and it said that the announcement set up a potential clash with Republican Attorney General Raul Labrador. The people behind it, including Sandpoint native Luke Mayville.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke was quoted in this story as saying, "We believe a challenge from Attorney General Labrador is likely, and we are confident the challenge will fail. There's nothing unconstitutional about giving all voters the right to participate in primary elections." And so it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, they met the mark, but there still could be some legal challenges to this initiative.
Right. It did, however, I would just mention also that those initiatives, especially in other states, do not always make it onto the ballot. I think it was Arkansas that maybe this week or last, there was an abortion initiative that had thought it had gathered its signatures and everything, but the Secretary of State rejected it. So that is a hurdle that needs to be cleared, and in this case, it has done. Here in the county election news, especially if you were watching the 4th of July parade, you would have seen Steve Johnson pulling his tractor with his running for office, but not for the office that he was running for a month ago. He has announced his candidacy for county commissioner in District 1. He ran in the was running as an independent for state senate, and has dropped out of that race now and has taken up the District 1 county commissioner race, and I guess he will face Brian Domke in November, and I believe he is running as a Democrat, not as an independent.
Over the last few years, Steve has kind of fit into slots where maybe some voters after the primaries are not happy with who advanced, and mm-hmm. Steve has stepped in to kind of run. He ran in that write-in campaign for state senate a couple of years ago.
Right. He opposed. Yeah, he was an opponent of Scott Herndon as a write-in candidate, and I think got something like 40% of the vote as a write-in as an independent in 2022. So he was an opponent of Herndon, and I think seen to some extent as an ally of Jim Woodward, who I think had endorsed him in that campaign. Woodward now has defeated Herndon for the Republican nomination, so they would have been facing each other, and Johnson has dropped out of that race rather than face Woodward and is now running for county commissioner in District 1.
But correct me if I'm wrong, on the mm-hmm. Kind of related to that, it's mm-hmm. Dan Rose is running against...
Yes,
against.
There is still an independent challenge, and he will be, on the ballot, not as a write-in, but his name will be there. But I don't think there will be a Democrat running in that for that seat for state senate. It is the month of plans. lot of plans in the paper this week. I'll start with the city, the comprehensive plan. They have their final draft has been published and will be considered for adoption by council on July 17th. That's next Wednesday at a public hearing. The city of Sandpoint.com, cityofsandpoint.com/comp plan is where you can find that, that full, I think, 134 page document. I'll ask Eric to talk about that, in a minute once we get through our, once we get through these headlines, because I think, he wrote at least one of the stories on that, that comprehensive plan. In the county, the county has approved the Sandpoint Urban Area Transportation Plan, which I think has now also been approved by the city of Sandpoint and Dover and Kootenai. I think I could be wrong, but I think that was the last major body that had to approve the Sandpoint Urban Area Transportation Plan. So that is moving forward, and they will be considering in the county the Schweitzer Comprehensive Plan. Bonner County Planning and Zoning will hear on August 6th about Schweitzer's plan to change, I think, seven properties that they own on the mountain. Schweitzer Ski Resort, or rather Alterra, the Alterra company that owns Schweitzer Ski Resort. In the Lake Pendere School District, there is a new 10-year facility plan, including expansion and repairs to middle school is kind of the Sandpoint Middle School is kind of the top line item there. And there in library news, in the East Bonner County Library, the new law went into effect, House Bill 710, on Monday, July 1st. Demonstrators held a rally of support for the library and against the bill on the 1st. About 50 people were there. The library also announced that they have a new director, Vanessa Velez, who has been the interim director since the last director stepped down, and has been a longtime employee of the library district. She will be the new library director. And there's a story in the Reader about East and West Bonner Library Districts redrawing their boundaries, or at least considering it. The districts, the boundary line between the two districts is proposed to be moved to match, I believe, the school district boundary line rather than the hospital district boundary line. Right now, the East Bonner County Library District is drawing tax revenues from an area that expands almost into Priest River. And there is, of course, the West Bonner County Library District with a library in Priest River that would like to see those revenues directed their way. I think it's a matter of something like $250,000 annually or something like that. I'd have to read the piece one more time to get the exact figure, but not real small change if you're a small town library.
No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's mm-hmm. Going to be significant on both ends.
Yeah. Let's start in the city. The comprehensive plan, they have published the final draft. Eric, I know you're new in town, but the comprehensive plan has been a kind of a point of controversy for quite a while. And it is... it was a point of focus for the elections last November. It is a large document, 134 pages. I have not read the whole thing, but it is now going forward and will be considered for adoption by council on July 17th. That's next Wednesday. I think the hearing's at 5:30. And anybody who's interested in seeing the whole comprehensive plan can go to that website I mentioned before, cityofsandpoint.com/comp plan. Do you have anything to say or anything that you can observe about the that comprehensive plan moving forward?
Yeah, I'll just say that from what I heard from the city council and from Mayor Grimm is that this plan has been, you know, in development, or parts of it have been in development for you know, 5+ years since 2019. And so this is the kind of the culmination of a lot of these projects coming together. And so there was something, you know, said to the effect of speak now or forever hold your peace coming up on that July 17th meeting.
Yeah. They city council reached out to this radio station. I think they've probably tried to contact every media outlet in the area to let people know that this meeting is coming up, because I think they might have been a little surprised at some of the pushback that they got after last summer when some of the waterfront redevelopment plan proposals were on display down at Farmers Market, and a lot of people were kind of surprised at the direction that this city was thinking about kind of taking, you know, taking new developments. So, yeah, July 17th, that will be possibly, it will be adopted by council. It doesn't necessarily, they I'm sure could.
Right. Because last October they were considering voting on it and approving it, and then change their mind probably with wanting to, with the feedback from the community, and then also with an election coming there. But you know, I think one thing to also remember with this is that a lot of the stuff they aren't necessarily bound by. It's just like, this is potentially what we want to do over the next 30 years.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah, it's kind of a guideline more than anything that they are strictly bound by. How about that 10-year facility plan for the Lake Pend'Oreille School District? With your article, Eric, mentions right, I think in the second paragraph, the $18 million repair to the middle school. That's a big, a large number, and that seems to be the main facility kind of outlay.
Yeah. That's sort of the biggest part of the plan. There are other projects that they have outlined in that 10-year plan, but the, you know, by far the most expensive one is that middle school renovation that they're planning on doing. And that's all being enabled by some state funding that they're planning to get. I think it's going to be around $15 million that they're expecting to get fairly shortly. And so that's going to be 2025 and 2026. They're anticipating doing renovation and expansion to the middle school, which, from what I've heard so far, that building needs a little bit of attention.
Yeah, is that safe to say, you think, Mr.
Yes,
Love?
Yes, I would say that's safe to say. I mean, there's grandparents and great-grandparents that went to that school, and it was probably old when they went to the school. So, and then, you know, when we look at kind of the issues throughout the last couple of years, a lot of it's been the big issues have been from that school. We had the water pipe break this winter,
right?
And that actually closed the school down for a week as they were getting testing to see if there is asbestos in this area. Potentially it was going to be kind of a long-term closure, but fortunately the test came back positive for the school district that there wasn't asbestos. But lots of issues in that building, and they're consistently having to do repairs. Now, you know, also this money is from some house bills that came through the last legislature to kind of provide money for school districts with their aging infrastructure, because, you know, it's not just Sandpoint Middle School that is going to receive this money. It's throughout the state. And then when you look at also some of the other buildings within the Lake Pend'Oreille School District, they're certainly older, as you identified in your story, because we've got, what, three elementary schools in the area that are over 60 years old?
Yeah. I want to say it was Farmingstead, Well, Washington, and Northside, I believe, are all more than 60 years old.
Wow. Yeah. I believe that. Washington, and they've been around for a little while. Any other... I mean, major expenditures or anything else in the in that facility plan, the 10-year facility plan that we didn't mention yet?
Yeah. It's those three elementary schools are set mm-hmm. to have just some utility systems upgrades. Mm-hmm. You know, heat, electric, restrooms, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, a huge chunk of it is going to go towards the middle school.
Right. So renovations to the middle school, extensive, and otherwise no new buildings or new construction, really. No new schools coming in, and no.
Right, yeah. But one of the things that they do mm-hmm. include in the board packet that they gave out was that essentially adding a practice gym to Sandpoint Middle School. Full disclosure, I'm an employee of the Lake Monterey School District. I'm also a basketball coach. So one hat, I would say, yeah, there's definitely a need for an extra gym. The gym at both the middle school and the high school get used, probably 16 hours out of the day when school is going. So that would add something to the campus there, and potentially mm-hmm. another facility that would be used by the Lake Monterey School District, and then also I think the community as well, yeah. having an extra gym space if that ends up being built would be, in my opinion, a nice addition.
Okay. Well, yes. I was going to mention something about that new facility being built at Travers Park as well. Is there, is that also considered, is that some place where the court sports will be able to practice, or is that just for kind of public use?
I'm not privy to, yeah, that's a way above my pay grade, and I'm glad it is.
Okay. Here's an article in today's Daily Bee with your byline, Eric. LPOSD drafts new learning materials policy. This is related to kind of those library story we were talking about before. This is in response to House Bill 710, the so-called harmful materials bill passed by the state legislature this year, which can hold library districts and school districts liable if children under the age of 18 are found to possess or be able to check out materials considered harmful by, I guess, their parents or guardians. So the LPOSD has a new materials policy. What is changing in the materials policy here at the Lake Monterey School District?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, they have both added a new policy and revised their existing policy mm-hmm. on library materials. And so this new policy is mostly kind of directed at having a protocol for the review and the reconsideration of materials. And so that's with, you know, a student or a community member or a guardian of that student comes and wants to, you know, challenge a material there and, you know, does not think that it's appropriate for that particular school or for the district. There's a protocol in which the district will kind of review that material. The superintendent will assemble and the board will assemble a committee to review that material. And then ultimately, depending on, you know, whether that material was part of the library or part of the, you know, the school curriculum or the district curriculum, the superintendent or the board has kind of the final authority on what happens to that material.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's part of, these policies are kind of part of a larger wave of, you know, new policies and new protocols that are coming up across the state, both in school libraries and in public libraries as well, as they're all kind of responding and interpreting this new legislation.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I thought was interesting in your story is that there is a clause stating that a school library may have a dedicated section for restricted materials. Is that correct?
Yeah. And as far as I understand that, this was part of that new policy that was drafted and had its first reading on Tuesday of this week. And so there was, from what I could understand before this new policy, there was no mention of restricted materials in the school board policy. Hmm. And so, you know, I think this might be something potentially that is going to be new, that some of these libraries may kind of be implementing now, a restricted material section that students with, you know, explicit parental permission can access materials within this section.
Yeah. Would they be planning to like immediately start moving books into the restricted materials section? Do you know? Or is this like, you know, they'll wait until they're challenged and then consider it? Or
yeah, I couldn't tell you. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's still a lot of moving parts with this. You know, it's, we're just about 2 weeks since the enactment of this, of HB 710. And yeah. so still a lot of moving parts with that.
Yeah. And school's not in session. So I guess we'll see what happens in September. One other, since I'm looking at the front page of today's Daily Bee, the sheriff's office is taking over the watercraft inspection stations here, taking over, I think, from the Idaho State Department of Agriculture. So you will see officers of the from the sheriff's department rather than the former, I think it was the department, the State Department of Agriculture that used to man those stations where you have to pull over and have your boat looked at, make sure you're not carrying any invasive species or anything like that.
Now, typically, just real quick on that, is that when you did drive past one of those stations, and this includes kayaks too, which is
a huge, it's everything.
Is that you typically saw a Bonner County Sheriff's car right near there, near the stations, because, you know, typically they, if a car or a boat didn't stop, then they would be the ones that would kind of follow up with it. So kind of, I guess in a sense, somewhat streamline it, because like I said, you typically drive past any of the stations in Bonner County and you would see a Bonner County Sheriff's Department vehicle close by.
Yeah. Well, we have more news. Let's, but let's talk real quick before we are completely out of time about Mr. Eric Welch. What makes you tick, Eric Welch? What brings you to Sandpoint? That's what I want to know.
So I'll tell you, I was born and raised in southern Minnesota, Rochester, Minnesota, and spent the first 18 years of my life there. And then I headed out west to Bozeman, Montana to go to school at the university there. And then now I pretty fresh out of there, graduated in May, and picked up and moved on up to Sandpoint.
Drawn to Sandpoint for any particular reason?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors. I think a lot of people in, you know, in this part of the country really appreciate the outdoor opportunities that are here. And, you know, from what I've seen so far, you know, being able to go up into the Selkirks last weekend, it's pretty exceptional here. And and that was a big part of what drew me here, along with, you know, hoping to get into to community journalism in a small and vibrant community like Sandpoint.
Yeah. When did you move in? When did you arrive here?
Yeah, it was about, I want to say just over 3 weeks and a day ago.
Wow. Okay.
So
very fresh in town. Okay. Well, did you go to the 4th of July parade or the fireworks or anything?
Yeah. I was down at City Beach for the fireworks, and that was, you know, I've been to several fireworks shows in my life, but that was probably the most up close and personal I've been with the show, and it was quite a really nice experience to be down there.
It is, yeah, they do. It is kind of right over your head there at City Beach.
Talk a little bit about your journalism background, because you worked at the student newspaper there at Montana State, correct?
That's right. Yeah. So the MSU Exponent, that newspaper has been around just about as long as the university. It's a 100-year-old student newspaper. And so, you know, while I was a student there, I got a chance to get involved with that as a sports and outdoors writer with that. So a lot of fun covering MSU football games. You know, being able to talk to people on the staff and kind of get out there in the community as well and talk to people in the outdoor scene in Bozeman. And so, you know, getting involved with that in school kind of lit my fire for journalism and community journalism and is a big part of why I'm here.
Now, you have, based on your bio, you have a pretty interesting degree. Kind of talk about how you mixed kind of two different aspects into what you ended up finishing with at Montana State.
Yeah. So my major that I graduated with in May was microbiology. And that's, you know, I'm probably part of a small collection of beat reporters with you know, a degree in that kind of field. And you know, with that, as I was starting, I originally thought I wanted to go into, you know, lab research, scientific research. And while I was at school, I worked in a bacteriology lab and sort of got a taste for that. But I, you know, the more time I spent there, I added a writing minor because I knew that writing was something that I was really passionate about. And, you know, with working at the newspaper and all this, I sort of started to steer elsewhere. But that was the degree that I graduated with. And so it's still science and, you know, biology and ecology is still a big passion of mine. But that's, you know, that's where I'm at right now.
That's cool. I think, you know, mm-hmm. besides covering a small town like its government, you also have a great place to kind of, you know, you've got a background that I think will work well on a lot of stories that we see around North Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Right. All those microbiology stories. I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, we're glad to have you here, Eric. And thanks for coming in to join us this morning. Did we miss any important news items before we sign off and head back to our music mix for the rest of the day?
We'll just say that the classic boat show, the Wooden Boat Show is this weekend. Tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, and then also I do have to give out a shout out to my employer because State released some reading numbers and the Lake Pontary School District finished in the top 10 for large traditional public schools in regard to number of students or percentage of students reading at a grade level. So I thought that was a pretty nice feather in the cap of the teachers that I work with.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the Wooden Boat Show, it is, of course, also Sandpoint Pride, the fourth annual Sandpoint Pride Festival this weekend. We just spoke to some of the organizers here on the radio yesterday. You can find that interview on our website, and it will be an interesting weekend in town for sure. And, well, we'll talk about it next week, I guess, here on North Idaho News of the Week, which I will not be here for. I think it's you and Chris.
Let's talk about that. Let's do it. All right, great.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Again, Eric Welch is a staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee. You can find his work in the paper or online at BonnerCountyDailyBee.com, I believe.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, we'll move right on into some music. And something off of Born in the USA seems appropriate for a hot weekend. Here's Bobby Jean from Bruce Springsteen's 1984 album. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY.